Welcome to the Product Podcast, brought to you by Product School, the podcast where you get fresh insight from leaders at top tech companies and startups. Remember, you can learn product management in person at our 15 campuses worldwide or study with us online. Visit productschool.com to learn more about our courses. You can also hang out with the leaders from these podcasts at our hundreds of annual events and catch us at ProductCon, the world's largest PM conference that takes place every year across the United States and in London.
I got my start working in product, building for businesses, and then I moved over to consumer growth. I didn't really understand what it meant to be a trust and safety PM until I got my first taste of working on it. And I'll define it as this, as Tron does, fighting for the user. What does that mean? Trust and safety work is about having deep empathy. What would you want as a user? What if you were using it? What matters? How can you protect the user? How do you think about different impact to the user experience? And that's trust and safety work. So I want to give you an example. It's election day, 2019, in Nigeria. And you're reading the news, but you're not sure if you can trust it. You're not sure who sponsored that media. All you know is that you're reading reports about the president who's gone missing, and it's claiming that they died, replaced by a clone, but there are other reports that he denies this. What are you to believe? What do you do as a user trying to get access to information? What do you trust? There's so many sources of information out there. And so I got to work on election integrity at Twitter, where we were able to try different things in different places. For example, in Nigeria, we worked with the Twitter Moments team to create highly credible sources of information from the Twitter Moments handle and partnering with fact-checking organizations. During the Indian elections, we introduced an ability to report misleading information about voting. These are really interesting things that had never been done before. And there were other things we'd done during the US midterms. At the end of them, it was great. It sounded really good on paper. The metrics were really interesting. Did it work? What impact did it have? Should we invest more? What should be the global strategy? We were left with a lot of questions. And so today, I want to talk a little bit about how you go and invest in trust to do better for your users, to create a product that is trusted. Four things. One, you need to understand the user. What is your job to be done? Understand what matters to them. You must root yourself deeply in that. Second, what are potential trade-offs? The company is thinking a lot about growth. Whether you're a startup, whether you're a large company, whatever you're working on, there are metrics at play that you could damage. And if you come to somebody with an idea about, hey, we want to ship this feature X that will improve safety, and you're not able to answer, what's the impact to finances? What's the impact to user growth? If you can't answer that, you'll have a hard time getting buy-in and support. And so what I recommend is putting together a really clear structure, a framework, which we're going to talk about. And then as you understand and work with the other PMs or other organizations, you can explain how you want to go about experimenting and what costs there might be on the business. There may be large costs, but if you don't speak that language, you won't get buy-in. Third, when you do work, when you're shipping product, set it up in a way so that you can causally measure your impact. What do I mean by that? If you ship something and then some metrics change, but you can't prove the connection, it might be a fluke. People won't believe to launch at scale, to invest more. So you need to make sure that you're investing in a framework and whatever experimentation necessary, data science work, whatever it is at your company, to make sure you can causally show that impact that you had. Okay, fourth, this is really hard. It's about the second order impact. What would regulators think? What would potential brand risk to the company be? If you do something to your product, or you don't, if you choose not to do something, what's the cost? And this is what some of the soft factors that might play into prioritizing your work, because the metrics may be really murky, but if there's a very clear public perception case on your side, or you can explain that there's long-term risk to the product, right? People can't trust the information they read. Why would they use it to consume news? It's a major question, and that could be on your side. Okay, let's talk about trade-offs. This is really hard. No matter where you work, large company or small, you have a graph that needs to move up and to the right. Quarter over quarter, month over month, week over week, whatever it is, users need to grow. That's the marching orders that most of the company needs to focus on. And if you think about the trade-off that you're going to make when you introduce something, you need to understand, well, if we introduce X, how does it change what those other metrics that are playing? And you can do this by speaking the language. So I highly recommend that if you're in the trust space and you're working with growth counterparts, to have a very good relationship, to really understand their motivations, what they're trying to do. People have a lot of empathy. They just need, they need to stop and think about it. I often have conversations with PMs around the trust and safety space. And when you start with these fundamental truths and assertions about potential safety impact, they're on board, they get it, but they also have a point of view of the metrics they're trying to put their gold on. And you just need to understand that. So sign up flow. This is often very controversial, right? You sign up for a service, you have to enter all this information. You have to enter your name, your email address, your phone number. You need to verify your phone number. And if you introduce something new as a product manager to this, you know, to this flow, then you might be harming the growth metrics. And so the signup flow can be very, very sensitive. The color of a button, the size of a font. And if you want to add an entirely new step that might create some kind of safety impact or trust impact or fraud impact, right? Then you might be damaging growth. And so what you want to be able to do is take a problem like this and understand the funnel. Okay, you have 100 users that download the app. Then you have X number that are going to start installation, right, and setup. And then you go through all these steps, and you have Y number that are going to become users. And that lifetime value is X dollars. Now, if you introduce a step, what's the potential damage? What are your options? Where could you introduce it? How can you experiment? What is the exit criteria? These are all things that you should go into design and hypothesis and experimentation setup, be able to answer right away. At Lyft, we have many types of users that we think about. For example, we think about our drivers, our driver safety, and it helps them if the rider has a photo. Oftentimes doesn't seem like that makes sense to a lot of people, but we tried different messaging here, and we tried a number of different experiments, safer, smoother pickups, trying to show some kind of value proposition. And we introduced it during the signup flow. We learned a lot in all these different experiments. We're able to understand the impact to growth and user drop-off. Sometimes you may have a hypothesis that it's going to hurt growth really badly. And as long as you set that up in the beginning and you run an experiment, you can see how to mitigate that. Maybe there's a later button, do it later. And maybe there's no impact, right? There's a lot of different possibilities, and you need to break down the problem that you're working on and explain it to people so that they won't freak out. So let's talk a little bit about frameworks and how you can move metrics, whatever you're working on. The first step is to create a really simple framework. So I just have an example here, how you have low risk, high risk, a reversible decision, an irreversible decision. And then you can easily point to a box and say, okay, if it's high risk and irreversible, we need to do more work. We need to validate this. We need to go out and do a lot of data science. But hey, if it's low risk and reversible, you can change the color of a button back and forth. Move fast, do it. And another layer, another way of thinking about this kind of a framework that you probably want to add is the impact that you might have to the product itself. So if it's low risk, high impact, you may have different thresholds. So my point here is that if you have a framework in place and you root all the work that you're doing in this way, it'll be easy for people to digest.
it's hard to talk about trust and safety matters because they can be about offline harm. It could be about democracy, misinformation, about vaccines. And it becomes very emotional to talk to people about it. And so when you break down a problem in a framework that's easy to understand, you're going to have people nodding their heads like, this makes sense, this makes sense, this makes sense. And it's harder to argue with. And if they argue with you, that's fine. Take that criticism and build it into your framework, build it into your metrics. Okay, your 4-step guide to getting buy-in. How do you get buy-in to that trust and safety product you want to work on? Or maybe somebody's trying to pitch you on something. First, start with an absolute truth. Wrong information about voting could lead to hurting democracy, right? If you tweet out that it's election day on a day that's not, right, on voting day, that can majorly impact the elections. And when you start with those kinds of simple truths, people can get around them. They can wrap their heads around them. And you can move forward. Okay, second, your metrics. Explain it to a 6-year-old. You can't explain it to a 6-year-old. Start again. Start over. Throw away the piece of paper. Erase the whiteboard. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing. And try to come up with things that are long-term metrics that you can move quarter over quarter for years into the future. Okay, I know that's like hard sometimes to think about years into the future, but if your metrics are changing every quarter, then it's hard to go back and explain the impact that you had. So when I was working on growth, we were able to track cohorts of people across quarters and quarters and quarters of time, and you'd start to see this huge impact that eventually happened to the entire platform by doing that kind of cohorting of user groups. And the metrics stayed stable over time so that you have other things to worry about. You have other problems to deal with. So invest a lot of time in those initial metrics. Make sure you can explain it to a 6-year-old. Okay, third, working in trust and safety can be very gnarly and you may have a lot of opposition. You may want to do something that can be very risky. I want to try a pilot and do something crazy during an election. You're going to get a lot of people thinking like, a lot of bad things can happen. Are we sure we want to do this? Isn't it easier just not to do anything? And what I will say is you start with 1 and 2, right? You have principles, you have goals, you have metrics. People understand what you're doing on. And then you do something small and then you do it bigger and then you do it bigger and you can influence the overall strategy of the company. Fourth, as you're working on these things, your metrics need to be causally impacted. As I mentioned earlier, it can't be a fluke. People need to understand the work that you've done has directly impacted and is responsible for those metric changes for the better. And if it's not, revise your metrics, revise your methodology, try different experiments, and admit it, be upfront about it. Okay, that can be really hard. There are times where you just can't prove it. You're like, okay, there's this really gnarly thing we need to do. And everybody's like, yes, 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 we need to do that. Makes sense. But you don't have a way of proving it, or you need to go all in and do it all at once. And maybe the risk is smaller if you don't do anything. Maybe it's large if you don't do anything. It can be a really tough decision to make, but there are other things that you can use to your advantage. One, public perception. If you do something or if you don't do something, how will the public react? What will they think? Second, leadership. Maybe you can get leadership to buy into your strategy, into the work, for other reasons at play. Third, there might be regulatory risks. There may be things that if you're not doing, if depending on the size of your company, that can incur a lot of problems. One of the issues I used to work on was bots on Twitter. And if you're not able to identify a bot, it causes all kinds of problems. And how do you identify, how do you define a bot? What is a bot? There are bots like CNN. Those just tweet out information at regular intervals, right? And so working with the regulators and understanding what their concerns are, there are other ways to address some of the problems. So back then we introduced on every single tweet, if you click on the details, Twitter for iPhone, Twitter for Android, right in there. And then if it's from some kind of third-party application, it would show that application. It was a really small thing, but it went a long way towards helping people understand and sort of beginning to open up that conversation about what bots are. Okay. A couple of years ago, overnight, Pinterest removed all information about vaccines on their platform. It was a very small amount of information, but it was a major push in a direction that many people were thinking about, but it was dangerous territory for various reasons to moderate content. And so I was very surprised at this. I was like, this is amazing. Thank you for doing this. Thank you for leading the way. How do you guys think about this? What's the framework? And it was very interesting to see this. And it's an example where there may be some metrics at play. Maybe there weren't, but there was a very large public perception possibility by taking this kind of a stance. And that leads me into public perception. So if you're smart, you're a small company, your startup versus you're a big company, the risk can be very different. I was talking to somebody about this and they're like, you've been at public companies too long. And I was like, I've also been at startups. And so let me try to break it down for you. So you have here startups that are gonna have risks to think about in the public perception. And there are fewer of them, but I still think they're important versus at a big company. So at a big company, you're gonna be worried about regulatory fines. They can cost you global revenue, if for example, in GDPR. There could be mega brand damage, right? We're very sensitive and care a lot about the brand of Lyft. And so we think about that. We think about user trust. We want to have a lot of integrity in the products that we're working on. And then for a big company, there could be a lot of long-term strategic risk. As I mentioned with Twitter, it's this existential risk that if you can't read and know that the information that you're reading is true, why would you use the product in the long run? And so the risks that overlap with both are competitive risks. You can use one company or the other, right? If you do or don't do something in the trust and safety space, or churn. So somebody could have a very terrible experience in the trust space. They're never going to use you again, right? There are substitutable products for the things that you might be working on. Multiple rideshare companies, multiple food delivery companies, multiple media applications. And if you really mess something up, you're going to lose users. And that may not be small in the beginning, but that can add up over time. And I would just use this as potential public perception factors and risk calculations as you think about arguing for your trust and safety project. Okay, this is really important. Your own personal brand. I was fortunate to work on Twitter's health team, and there came a moment as we were developing momentum within the company on the work we were doing. It was so important. It was the top priority of the company. And I had growth PMs who were coming to me and asking, hey, I'm thinking about doing this thing, product X, but how do you have metrics for how it might impact what you're thinking about on the safety space? And so I became like kind of a consultant. I got to go in and learn about the thing they were working on the growth side and help advise to make sure it wouldn't disrupt some of the things we were thinking on the safety space. And so that takes time, but my point here is that I had a personal brand. The trust and safety team had a personal brand, that the work that they're doing is really important, and that I want you to take the things that you work on and influence products wherever you go. I have the opportunity to work on some of our download data and delete account pieces. I worked on elements of that at Twitter and then at Lyft. And we had minimum requirements. You need to just do X, Y, and Z, and you'll be done with it. Call it a day. Compliance, check the box. But I was presenting a new data and personalization option to Jack Dorsey once. And he said to me, how would somebody turn all this off? How do you make it really easy? And so that led to the creation of, in the personalization and data section, turn off all the data collection. I took some of those learnings and that deep user empathy with me to Lyft, and I wanted to show people that we had integrity in our products. If you want to download your data, here it is, one click, done. you want to delete your account, there's a couple steps. And we want to tell you how to get out of, like, if you have some other problems, we can route you to the right place. But look, you want to delete your account, done. You can do that. And that can be a cost saving on the company and on handling them manually. And it can also show integrity. You're like, all right, I don't need to delete my account. I just wanted to see what the option was. So I want to leave you with that the trust and safety space is gnarly. Whether you're working on fraud, you're working on offline harm, you're working on other things that I don't know. Just a couple years ago, we were in the dark ages, as a friend mentioned to me. They were like, it was rough. It was hard fighting with growth teams about something you wanted to work on. And we've come a long way because people understand that safety is so fundamental and important to the product. And so as you're thinking about, perhaps you're working on something in fraud, and if you do something, it might decrease your fraud metric by X, but there's this other, what's that user expectation? And it might cost the company Y in revenue if you do it this way. Maybe you fight for it. And I want you to think about that deeply because, hey, what's a brand you trust and why? There are brands all over the world where this kind of stuff is happening behind the scenes. We don't get a chance to talk about it that much. And so what's a brand you trust and why you trust them? And I want you to think about that. And what are the, some of the lessons that you can take back with you to wherever you are and make an impact to product development with that shining North Star? So if you remember nothing else from my talk, okay, three takeaways. One, if you work in trust and safety, play the long game, right? You want to do something that will have long-term strategic impact. It's why I work in this space. I think it's incredible that there's something I could be doing that will be on the platform for years and years to come. But start small, because you don't know what you don't know. And so you want to have a good framework. You want to iterate on your framework. Think of yourself as almost like a startup within the company, right? It's very exciting to work on this kind of stuff. Second, metrics. Move them causally. If you can't prove it, it's a fluke. Third, show integrity. Stand for something. Fight for the user as Tron did. Have people remember you for that. Make it your brand and influence other products. That's the most powerful way to become an impactful trust and safety PM. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Product Podcast. If you like this episode, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. For more product insights, head over to productschool.com.